Between the covers, the guest is local author Rainer Ward, who discusses his new novel, Advent, the story of a young man instrumental in expanding the psychedelic drug revolution. And at 11:30 on Words and Pictures, comics journalist extraordinaire and occasional Portlander Joe Sacco speaks with host S.W. Concer about his new project, The Great War, a 24-foot-long panorama depicting the first day of the Battle of the Somme. That's all coming up, but first on Press Watch, host Teresa Mitchell asked, why identify with your oppressors? And do you have the strength to open your heart to your fellow planetary citizen? That is coming up next on Press Watch.
KABU 90.7 FM Community Radio and the Clinton Street Theater are proud to present The Yes Men Fix the World. Thursday, November 14th at 7 p.m., KABU will be showing the 2009 indie classic film, The Yes Men Fix the World. The Yes Men Fix the World is the true story of two political activists posing as executives of giant corporations. In their thrift store suits, they lie their way into big business conferences and pull off pranks. That's The Yes Men Fix the World, November 14th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kabu.fm/yesmen2013.
Have you heard about the Melting Pot Silent Mobile Dance Parties?
Silent dance? Doesn't sound very fun.
Actually, it's a lot of fun. Picture 200 people dancing with headphones to the same music. The Melting Pot radio show will have a series of silent dance parties from 8 to 10 p.m. Tuesdays in Portland parks and public spaces. That's Tuesdays from 8 to 10 p.m. For more information and this week's location, go to kboo.fm/silent dance parties.
This KABU program is made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Yellow Pages, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit pdxgyp.com.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know, giving you the tools to destroy billionaire rule. This month, we have again seen entire cities reduced to piles of garbage with corpses strewn about, rotting on the streets, even caught in the trees, with help for the survivors seeming so far away that it's invisible to them for days at a time. It seems familiar now. Oklahoma tornadoes, Superstorm Sandy, walls of water in Colorado, walls of fire in California, and let's not forget Jim Crow Katrina. And the economy that once offered a job to every worker now sags like the couch cushions that hold the weight of jobless youth. Meanwhile, the billionaires race yachts and snap up million-dollar sedans. Do you know how much $1 billion is when you've got a couple $1 billion? When you're a Wall Street, screw-the-people, do-the-derivatives type of wheeler-dealer, You can buy a $1 million car and race it around as fast as you want because you can pay all the fines and you can have lawyers deal with everything and you won't pay for that. And you can smash that car and buy another one the next day and you can smash that car and buy another one the next day because do you understand a $1 million car is 1/1000th of a billion? Let me ask you, got a car? You got a job, you probably got a car because you got to commute and they expect you to be there on time. Public transportation's great, but you better get there. And you got kids? Well, you know, if you got really strong legs and a heart, maybe you can get those kids around in a bicycle, but most of you are going to get the kids around in a car because the cars, the kids got to get to places on time too. What percentage of your income is your car? Is it 1/2000th? I'll bet it's not. Just trying to give you the idea of just how rich the super rich are. And just trying to remind you once again that when you hear that there's $32 trillion hidden offshore so as not to pay taxes, that's outrageous. And it's also illegal if you look at what is claimed in corporate, in the corporate papers that are filed claiming that they will be good for the society. Did you know that they have to file those things? Corporate charters, they call them. So the millionaires, the billionaires race yachts and snap up $1 million sedans. It's funny what you can get used to. Camus remarked to the effect that there's no bottom to that resignation, so I suggest a change. Let's refuse to get used to it. What's climate change got to do with billionaires? Everything. Why can't you have what you need? Well, it's the economy, you're told. But I want to say, in the first place, there's no such thing. There's no such thing as the economy. Let's look at that for a minute. You want a job? Well, the economy is down. What's that mean? Well, it's no one's fault. It's just the way it is. It's the economy. I'm sorry, the economy can't support a job for you right now. Bridges need fixing. School children need teachers. People need housing. People need relief from debts. People need socialized healthcare that you can just go to the doctor and not pay other than being a functioning member of society. People need their human rights addressed, but there's a universal excuse to prevent action. Well, it's the economy. And that's a lie because there's no such damn thing. Let me try those phrases of necessity and misery with another predicate. People need jobs, housing, a sense of progress, relief from debt, but they can't have it because right now there's this condition, you see, and it's called political decisions to give all significant power to the billionaires and the generals. Political decisions to give all significant power to the billionaires and the generals. The economy is just an excuse. It's a word. It's used to control your mind. Be passive. It's the economy. Wait for leaders. Hope for change. Wait for the times to change. Believe in hope. Believe in absurdly restricted voting choices. Believe in the economy as some sort of natural force when it isn't. We have exactly the economy that our rulers want, and the beauty of it is we're taught to say with pride that we're not ruled. We rule ourselves. But if we ruled ourselves, if we had democracy, would we agree to give more power to 400 heirs and tyrants than to half the population? Because we do. Would we set up a system in which all political debate is trumped by an opaque donation system that only the super rich can manipulate? An opaque donation system that goes to the media, which manipulates our minds by setting the agenda and excluding things that are not on the agenda, like your needs and rights. If the voter has power, why does the voter give that power to invisible plutocrats? Why do so many people not vote? Well, truth. It's a scam. Abby Hoffman once said that it's time to cry theater in a crowded fire. This thing about the economy is theater. We are so hypnotized by our rulers that our rulers are invisible. And our humiliation, misery, and despair are accepted as ineluctable fate. Economy, my ass. Our future is on fire, and the arsonists mock us from their helicopter and submarine-equipped 100-foot yachts. We, the humans, have long expressed our desire to live as approximate equals, to preserve the ecosystems and climate, to build happier and freer lives for ourselves and our children and our children's children, but we chain our own feet in the name of the economy. It's the economy is a lie. It's the rule of the super rich. Is the truth. To get there, you first have to admit that you are ruled. Well, humiliating, isn't it? Doesn't that kind of burn? Puts the lie to the old rugged individual meme, doesn't it? Well, you never were a rugged individual. Neither was I. You've depended on the society at large for everything, from diaper delivery to electricity all your life. There's nothing humiliating about being a member of society, but it is degrading to live as a powerless servant, discarded as soon as you are used up. Come on, you're all looking at that. Gosh, can I save up enough on my 401k when they take out that 2% fee every year and that adds up to 60% of how much I would get if they didn't take out the 2% fee every year? Blah, 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 blah. And have I worked for long enough? And am I putting enough in it? And oh my goodness, the stock market crashed again. I lost it all. And how's this? Try this on for size. You're a human being. You live in this society. You have a right to housing, food, medical care. You have a right to be treated as an honored person after you have spent your life working. And you have a right to be treated as an honored person even if you haven't spent your life working, but most especially if you have. But it's all just some kind of lottery, it seems. Sure, a lucky and plucky few workers might save enough to munch frozen entrees in a bungalow until they're carted off to the incinerator. So what? Here's a story with a too familiar ring. And I'm putting this in the context of mind control, turning us against each other. Young black woman injured in a car accident. She's 19 years old. She doesn't realize that 19-year-old black women generally, black people generally, do not have the luxury of going to people to ask for help at their houses when they have a car accident. She doesn't know she's young, so she goes to somebody's porch and she asks for help loudly because she's in pain. She's been in a car accident. Hello, white man responds by blasting her head with a shotgun. She's dead. And as of yesterday, he hadn't even been arrested. An accident, an aberration, not in the USA, where the militias referred to in the Second Amendment for guns had everything to do with keeping Africans in chains. Nothing's changed. What color are those semi-literate twerps who march around with rifles in parking lots to demand their Second Amendment gun rights? What color are they? Also, not a coincidence. I remember when a certain group led by a certain Fred Hampton tried to publicly hold the society to those written down Second Amendment gun rights you got a right to, and especially if it's not loaded, long gun in public, and blah, 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 he was poisoned and shot in his sleep. Guess what color his skin was? People of that color skin didn't show up much for Occupy rallies, probably because armed police also show up at Occupy rallies. And certain things have happened between armed white police and black protesters, if I recall correctly. The past is never dead. It's not even past. Ironically, quoting Faulkner there, he was referring to the South when he said that, but there's a little bit of the South in every town, isn't there? How much power would Occupy have had if there were no white supremacy? If we were not divided against ourselves continually, using the media, using the prisons? It's very profitable for our rulers for us to be divided against ourselves. What would it be like if white organizers started taking their cue from black organizers? If the people ruled all the people, what would it look like? I don't mean if all the people voted. I don't mean if there were term limits or something like that. What I mean is, what if actual freedom and democracy broke out? It would be criminalized, wouldn't it? Freedom means a lot of things, but I'm pretty sure it doesn't mean having a vast array of secret police agencies archive and parse your every gesture, and I'm pretty sure free people don't stand in lines in their socks to be checked for non-existent bombs when they need to take a ride. Democracy depends on truth. Truth, the climate is screwed by the petroleum industry's greedy billionaires. Truth, the beaches in Florida and the Gulf of Mexico became the private property of British Petroleum to reward them for poisoning that part of the world. And the people, when they showed up to see what was happening, were run off at gunpoint. Some democracy. That's not what I call democracy. It's not what I call freedom. Truth. Three skyscrapers in New York were detonated with pinpoint accuracy by military-grade explosives experts 12 years ago, and Iraq and Iran and Afghanistan never had anything to do with it. Truth. Levels of radioactivity are rising worldwide because billionaires have fantastic tax giveaways from nuclear power plants and all that money behind it. Truth, U.S. soldiers are used to terrify, torture, and destroy any society that might decide to keep its resources for the benefit of its own citizens, and we are told that they are fighting for our freedoms. Truth, the generals and the billionaires are terrified that someday, somehow, a growing number of people will decide to find out the truth for themselves and act in their own best interests. Repeating, the generals and the billionaires are terrified that someday, somehow, a growing number of people will decide to find out the truth for themselves and act in their own best interests. What's that sound? Is that a Ferrari crashing? I know of a dentist somewhere in Mexico who lives well, highly regarded by her society. She fixes teeth by first asking the dentist what they feel. By looking, testing, prodding carefully, looking into the eyes of her patients. Her patients love her. And she is renowned for her heart and for her precision, for her excellent work. She doesn't order an x-ray. She doesn't even have an x-ray machine in there. If some mystery presents itself, she'll ask for an x-ray. But she doesn't support a fancy office, an array of expensive machines, a bevy of receptionists, or a fat ego from her proceeds. She charges a fourth of what U.S. dentists charge. Try to get dental care in the U.S. without an x-ray. Go ahead and try. It doesn't matter to a U.S. dentist whether you really need one or not, because the x-ray machine is in the office and must be paid for. The receptionist gets a salary, and the dentist has a big mortgage to pay, and so the patients must be channeled through in a rapid and efficient stream. Insert the phrase, it's the economy here. Because otherwise, we'd have to admit, with dentists and with all forms of interaction, we are all accustomed to being complete alienated jerks to each other for no reason than to channel riches in a continuing stream to the super rich. Think about it. Number to call with your comments, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. If you're listening to Democracy Now!, you know that WikiLeaks released the secret negotiated draft text, that text they've been hiding for the entire Trans-Pacific Partnership Intellectual Property Rights chapter. That negotiation, being so carefully hidden from you, is the largest ever economic treaty, encompassing nations representing more than 40% of the world's GDP, and quoting WikiLeaks. I pulled up WikiLeaks. If I hadn't done anything else, that would put me on a list, wouldn't it? Going to give you more on this, but I would like to remind you, you are listening to KBOO Portland. And if you are listening to KBOO Portland on your car radio, or if you're listening into someplace, in some place without a computer, without a computer's microphone, which you think is off, picking it up, well, then you're listening to it in a way that the NSA can't detect. You're just listening to it. You're doing what you want, and no one's tracking you. Good old radio, we call that. KBOO Portland, I'm Teresa Mitchell. This is Press Watch. I'm talking about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or the TPP. The TPP is indeed TP when it comes to moral quality. The chapter published by WikiLeaks is perhaps the most controversial chapter of the TPP due to its wide-ranging effects on medicines, publishers, internet services, civil liberties, and biological patents. Significantly, the released text includes the negotiation positions and disagreements between all 12 prospective member states, who, I remind you, are doing it on the sly. Why? Because they don't want you to know. Why? Because they're screwing you. The TPP is a forerunner to the equally secret ES-EU Pact, TTIP, Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, for which President Obama initiated U.S. and EU European Union negotiations in January 2013. Together, the TPP and the TTIP will cover more than 60% of the global gross domestic product. Both pacts exclude China. Well, I guess they already screw their citizens bad enough. Since the beginning of the TPP negotiations, the process of drafting and negotiating the treaty's chapters have been shrouded in an unprecedented level of secrecy. So you can thank Julian Assange and the whole WikiLeaks for giving you some information about it. Now, of course, it's going to show up on KBOO Radio, and of course, it's going to show up on Press Watch, but you know, I've been trying to get the least bit of information about it for the longest time. This is pretty much the first substantial bit. Access to drafts of the TPP chapters is shielded from the general public. Members of the U.S. Congress are only able to view selected portions of treaty-related documents in highly restrictive conditions and under strict supervision. How do you like that? You elect someone to Congress, you think they've got Well, you would think they have some moxie, certainly some social position. I'll just read this document. I think, you know, if I was in Congress, someone hand me a document and I wanted to read it, I'll say, I'll just read this. I'm sorry, you have to be supervised. I would have some rather vulgar words to say. Who the hell are we electing? But Leonard has called the number. The number is 503-231-8187. Hi, Leonard. What's up?
Well, now, a little bit about my background. I was in the military for 8 years. And, yes, it's true. But the thing is that U.S. soldiers are expendable. Think of them like a disposable razor, right? You use it. When you're done using that disposable razor, what do? You throw it away, right?
Yep.
That's what it's like. Because there's something that you might be interested in. It's called an acceptable losses formula. So let's say you have a hill, you know, a little grassy knoll or something that you want to take by force.
With foot soldiers.
Yeah, with foot soldiers, combined efforts, anything like that, right? Now, keep this in mind. Now, depending on how valuable that strategic point is, acceptable losses can go up to, I don't know, half of whatever available force you have. So, I mean, think of it this way. One out of two people, done, gone, it, finished.
Yes, you know? And we see and that then, on the streets when we have our soldiers who were sent out for the best of reasons, told that they were going to defend freedom and democracy, did the best and bravest job they possibly can, got blown up several times, were sent back into theater, and finally get sent back here, shattered, and not given a job.
Well, there's also fear, too. I mean, a lot of employers say that there is, you know, there's no fear or discrimination against veterans. That's a lie. There are a lot of vet-friendly employers. You know, there's places like, you know, Dave's Killer Bread, and, if you know, there's a second chance organizations out there that will help you out. But for the most part, when you go out there, you know, you have to keep a certain skill set hidden. You know, I mean, you have private military contracting, things like that. But, I mean, you have to ask yourself ethically, is that a good idea? You know, and that's where it boils down to. I mean, do you really want to do something that is, you know, considered inhumane? Because there are plenty of destabilized countries in the world. There are plenty. There are more than, you and I can count on our fingers and toes. And that's going on right now. But, I mean, the whole thing about Syria, that's been known about for a while. I mean, all the stuff that's going on that's just being leaked now, or all these issues that are now, I mean, it's been known about for a long time. And part of it is like, when you destabilize a country, anytime there's been a U.S. presence or the U.S. intercedes, there's never going to be a absence of U.S. presence. There's always going to be an embassy. There's always going to be a small detachment of armed or personnel in that country, no matter what. So if you set foot in the country as a U.S. soldier, keep in mind that U.S. soldiers will probably never leave that country. There will always be a small contingent.
I mean, very true.
With every embassy, there's always going to be a small contingent of armed forces.
Like right now in Baghdad, in that giant armed compound that is laughingly called an embassy, there are a great many mercenaries and contractors, and heck yeah, it's a military occupation.
Well, I mean, and part of it, too, is that we live in a, you know, kind of a war-driven economy. So, I mean, and you know, overspending, debt leveraging, all this stuff got out of hand. Now, see, bank regulation was actually a good thing. Granted, it could have been refined a bit more, but when banks became deregulated, debt leveraging got out of control.
Funny that. What have you got to say about the TPP?
I've been kind of out of the loop for a while. I've been kind of isolated for a long time.
You've been intentionally kept out of the loop on the TPP, which is the point I was kind of making here.
Yeah. I was actually researching the whole, like, FEMA action plan, the one where they're talking about dealing with the certain classified FEMA action plan, where it's talking about dealing with, like, a 80% population loss, you know. I was also looking into the whole DHS buying large quantities or large stockpiles of bullets.
I mean, billions of dollars worth of bullets, incredible amounts of bullets, yes. And, not armor-piercing bullets either.
They're not target practice bullets either. They're actual rounds, you know, we're talking about hollow points. We're talking about military-grade ammunition. We're not talking about target ammo. We're not talking about practice ammo. We're talking large grades of, you know,
something to shoot civilians with, and they've bought it here. Yes, very creepy. Good point. Well, I'm going to go to more of the text on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and I thank you very much for your call. You've made some great points.
Thank you.
The TPP negotiations are currently at a critical stage. The Obama administration is preparing to fast-track the TPP treaty in a manner that will prevent the U.S. Congress from discussing or amending any parts of the treaty. Numerous TPP heads of states and senior government figures, including President Obama, have declared their intention to sign and ratify the TPP before the end of 2013. Folks, this is the rule I was talking about. This is the rule of billionaires. This is not an exaggeration. The rule of billionaires who can hide $32 trillion offshore to keep it from being taxed so they can play with it, so they can buy million-dollar cars and smash them. I'm not exaggerating about that either. This is a huge problem in parts of Europe where billionaires have decided that the roads are kind of fun. You should hope fervently that these people never decide that they would like to rip through the streets of Portland, because they will. They can afford to, and they can afford to pay off the police, and they will. And they are a terror anywhere that they are. But I just use that to give you an idea of how rich the super rich are. I'll say it again. They buy million-dollar cars. They smash them for fun. They buy a million-dollar car the next day, because that represents less than a thousandth of their income, of their wealth. The 95-page, 30,000-word IP chapter in the TPP lays out provisions for instituting a far-reaching transnational legal and enforcement regime, modifying or replacing existing laws in TPP member states. Bottom line, in the words of WikiLeaks editor-in-chief Julian Assange, if instituted, the TPP's IP regime would trample over individual rights and free expression, as well as ride roughshod over intellectual and creative commons. If you read, write, publish, think, listen, dance, sing, or invent, if you farm or consume food, if you're ill now or might one day be ill, the TPP has you in its crosshairs, end quote. And Pat's on the line. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Hey. The 1%, I really was thinking about this last night, and it just is wonderful that you're on the radio talking the truth. But the 1%, as I see it, is really positioning to embed and retain and power and hold on to that strongly. And I think the tipping point's here, and the tipping point's now. I really feel that the baby boomers, we can band together with our youth that are in college and youth that are in high school and start making positive change, but we have to do it now. And I just joined the Gray Panthers, and I think we need to get a real active group going here.
Gray Panthers, it's good to hear about that. Tell me more about the Gray Panthers. Do we have a local chapter here in Portland?
Yeah, well, I don't know if they do or not. I joined the National, and I'm looking at the Syracuse Cultural Workers catalog, and they have an elders pledge in there. And one of the things is, as an elder and as myself, that I'm starting to worry about is that we're starting to be defined as a social and economic problem.
Oh, yeah.
We're not a problem. We're a strength. What the hell is our culture about here?
Billionaires.
You know?
Answer that question easily. Well, good. I'm glad that you are. I'm glad that somebody is.
Okay.
You know, the mayor of New York mentioned, the new mayor, mentioned that we live in the world that Occupy has created, and what he meant was that people have begun to become aware of just how extreme our maldistribution of wealth is, and what it is to be a billionaire, and how a billionaire becomes a billionaire by extracting the wealth, for example, the Walmart heirs, of people who work very, very hard and don't get enough to live on. That's important. You have to keep workers working harder than they can work for less than they can live on. That's how you become a billionaire. My gosh, I'm out of time. You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. Stay tuned. Coming up is going to be Linda Olson Osterlund and much more of KBOO Public Affairs, KBOO Portland.
Hey, Tom Hartman here, and KBOO, Community Radio for Portland and Beyond, is bringing me to Portland. I hope to see you Friday, November 22nd at 7:30 p.m. at Powell's on Burnside in Portland. My new book is out, The Crash of 2016, and I'll be giving a talk and signing books at Powell's, so be there or be square.
45 DJs play
45 RPM records
all day. tune into KBOO on November 16th from noon to midnight
for a special 45th anniversary celebration.
DJs will play 15-minute sets of 45 RPM records,
while from noon to 8 p.m., we'll have an open house birthday party at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue with refreshments,
birthday cake, station tours, and more.
So join us November 16th
in person at KBOO from noon to 8 p.m. and on air from noon to midnight
to celebrate our 45th year of serving the musical, political, and cultural needs of the Portland metro area, Cascadia, and the world.
For more information, go to kboo.fm/45rpm2013.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to A Deeper Look this morning. I'm your host, Lynn.